Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. We're gonna play on and stand strong. With Trollo and Dibs, turn the game on. Bump up the volume, it's time to play ball.
Friday, boys and girls, time to rock and roll. Joe, Lo, Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Thank you for riding shotgun with us. It is greatly appreciated. As always, we have a very, very special show for you today. Joe, Lo, and Dibs, of course. Adam Kaplan in 1 hour. But Brian Baldinger, former NFL offensive lineman, now with the NFL Network. He's in town covering the Steeler-Niner game. He'll be on the call this weekend. He was supposed to join us in studio for all 4 hours, 6 to 10. Apparently, there's an issue with some directions and parking. He's not here. And I had this whole segment worked up.
Right.
And now I'm realizing just the utter disrespect on behalf of this guy. Stand us up.
I don't know what to do, Lo. I don't know how we proceed. We had this whole thing, this elaborate open with pomp and circumstance at the ready for one Brian Baldinger.
I put pants on today.
I thought about it, but went with the shorts instead and the hoodie as per usual. Lo, what do we do? Do we give him a pass? Do we throw the flag? I have the flag if I need to go get it.
No, we definitely give him a pass. Come on, guys. Take care of Baldy. I want you guys to care. Keep beating him up. Don't give him any breaks. This is what you guys do me. If I'm late, glow, privileges. Get him into 1%. Get him. Beat up on him. I want to see you guys come down his role. So I'm going to enjoy this.
I know a lot of people don't view it the way I do, but I look at our show very similar to the Marine Corps. Very disciplined.
Sure.
Very organized. Very professional. Very dependable and reliable. We are the Marine Corps of sports talk radio.
Oh, wow.
This is unacceptable. You can't be late to the Marines. Right? Were the Marines late to World War II? No, because the Allies won. Because the Allies won. So this insolence will be met swiftly and appropriately when Brian Baldinger does join us. Don't really know what to talk about. What do you think of that Thursday night game?
Oh, boy.
Really, really enjoyed it.
I'm with Tom Brady. Turned it off. I like this.
You see
tweet.
This guy? Now he's out there tweeting, talking about the officials.
Dude, they're called holding. Some of those, honestly, the officials got it. I mean, to you guys' defense, Dibs, you guys got it too tough because you guys can't make the right calls. I think the officials
sounds
now.
It's like a backhanded something.
It's a Federer. It's a Roger Federer.
I'm just honest. They are so confused now. They do not know what to call. Joe, they called some holdings on receivers, guys blocking down, and clearly it was not even close to holding, and they still were calling. Holdings are up 65%.
Holdings up 65%.
Holdings up 65%. I mean, the game flow of the games, it's terrible. Ratings are going to continue to drop. I'm going to tune out.
Yeah.
Ratings are popping this year. Here's the point I was making last night. And I see, I'm not saying you're wrong, but here's what we do. This is the cycle. From February, right after the Super Bowl, all the way up until the beginning of September. We talk about how much we miss football, and we count down the weeks. Then we get to the beginning of September. Football starts. We all welcome it back. We all celebrate. We're all excited. And then a week after that, until the Super Bowl, we complain about officiating the whole way. And then the second the season ends, we complain about how we miss football, and we can't wait for it to be September again. That's the cycle. And that's what Thursday night highlights for us, is the incompetence on behalf of the quality product you can get more often than not. Like Thursday night football oftentimes is bad, not just from officiating, but from play as well, because you only have 4 days to get ready for something that requires more than 4 days. It's not baseball. It's not basketball. It's not hockey. This is a sport that requires so much prep, so much health and recovery, that when you throw these guys out there and you add in travel as well, right? You throw these guys out there, and in 4 days you say, play great. Oh, by the way, officials officiate this great, and we're going to throw some Mother Nature into the effect as well. And what do you expect? What do we honestly expect? You're going to get this as a product. It's okay. Just shake it off a little bit. We got a big Sunday coming up. We got Utah at USC tonight. We're good. We got a good football weekend coming up. Notre Dame and Georgia, a lot to get excited about.
Yes, and you don't have to dwell on the officials and the officiating. And, you know, you can talk about holding being up 68% all you want. Players at this point of the season, you know, penalties are being committed and penalties are called. And, you know, players want everything to be perfect.
No,
and you're dealing with human beings that are out there trying to officiate a game that is wildly imperfect, 22 people moving at high speed.
Got a question for you. Asked this on social last night. Want to see where you two are at. One game, NFL, winning in. You win this game, you're into the playoffs. You have the following two options as your starting quarterback for this game. Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston?
Jameis.
You didn't even blink.
Yeah.
Social went nuts with that question. People were all looking for a third option. You very quickly went to Jameis.
I was hoping for Minshew as a choice because the shoe led my Jags to the victory last night. Shout out the shoe.
Dibs all evened up.
Yeah, we're all square here. Quite a long way to go. But yes, all square for the time being. I would go with Marcus Mariota. Jameis.
Do either of you feel confident?
No, of course not. Well, he answered quickly, but based on what, you know, Lois said about Jameis Winston, what we saw from Jameis Winston, I think this whole question is an indictment on Marcus Mariota more than it is an endorsement of Jameis Winston.
Both of them not good, but I mean, I just think that if you need
to
score,
numbers one and two picks. This is year five, each of them.
They're bad. They're bad. And
would you put them in the hung tooth category, or they're just bad?
HT?
Yeah, because, you know, when
not hat tip.
When you call somebody a hung tooth, it's usually like, wow, that guy's...
They're a step away from it. I don't think Marcus...
Step above the tooth.
I don't think that Marcus Mariota had the capability or the ability to go win you a close game. I think Jameis, if he's on, he can. He can show you some signs of lighting it up. He's just inconsistent. Mariota...
So you're sitting there thinking... I'd rather just gamble. You're going to gamble.
Okay.
I'm going to gamble. Yeah, maybe I get the better version of Winston and I have a chance. But with Mariota, he's not going to lead me to victory. I like your analysis there. That's good analysis.
Strong.
It is Football Friday, brought to you by Oaks Card Club. Play it smart. Play at Oaks and Xfinity. And something I'd like to draw your attention to, next Friday, we are going to honor the career of one Bruce Bochy heading into his final weekend managing the Giants. We're going to be honoring him all day next Friday on the station with guests including Matt Cain, Brian Sabian, Bob Costas, Barry Zito, and many, many more. We will also have 10 Louisville Slugger retirement Bruce Bochy bats from Big Time Bats to give away, as well as an autographed Bochy collage. And it will be an opportunity for you, the Giants fan, to call in with your memories. Friday, September 27th, it's Ode to Bochy on 95.7 The Game. Thanks a lot, Giants, for getting that last run across the plate in the ninth. Meaningless to everyone except those who had the under. 8.5. The series was won. Bochy got his 2,000th. Just strike out and get out of there. And yet, here we go. Nice little rally in the eighth to put two on and then walk one in the ninth and then lose 5-4. Either complete the mission or get the hell out of there is what I say. Stop with the half measures. I don't want to lose 5-1. Let's lose 5-4. Great. That's outstanding for your run differential. Congratulations.
You got to love to see a young team fighting for every out, Joe, and fighting for every at-bat. And unfortunately, Longo couldn't come through with the bases juiced.
I was really pulling for
him. To turn the tide. And, you know, ultimately, when you look at the standings, you realize this Giants team is still in it. Their elimination number is one. Their tragic number is now one. So
wait a minute. They're actually still alive?
I just punched it up.
Season ends next week.
They're still in it, Coach, with nine to play.
I would have lost that bet.
I got to
tell you. You told me come September 20th, are they still mathematically alive? I would have told you N-O.
They are nine back of Milwaukee with nine to play. So their tragic number, which not their magic number, the tragic number on the number where you're eliminated is one. So if they run the table and somehow the five teams in front of them all lose the table, I got to tell you, they're still in this thing.
Big NFL weekend. Let me just go around very quickly regarding the opposition in the NFC West. Seattle hosting New Orleans. The Rams at Cleveland Sunday Night Football. Arizona hosting Carolina. Now, Arizona win or loss is not going to matter in this equation, but if the Niners beat the Steelers and Seattle loses at home to the Saints and the Rams lose at Cleveland, you do realize come Monday morning the Niners are in sole possession of first place in the NFC West.
Yeah, that would be it. I mean, shoot, the Niners fans, they'd be out in the streets probably, but it's still
19-0 becomes a realistic conversation at that point.
It becomes realistic, definitely. No, I think it just gives you hopes and it just tell you that there's more parity than the National Football League than people thought it would be. And so if that happens, if you see Cleveland beat you know, the Rams, and which is possible at home, and the Saints win with backup quarterbacks in Seattle. That'll just show you Seattle's not as good as you think and tells you there's more parity. And I think people will change the way they view the Niners. They would say, hey, this team has a legitimate chance of winning the conference.
Joe, who do you think is more likely to lose of those two?
Just the Rams.
You think the Rams
Sunday
are more likely to go to Cleveland?
Sunday night football at Cleveland, non-conference opponent. When we saw them on the road at Carolina 2 weeks ago, the defense gave up 20-plus. I would think to myself, that's the one.
Yeah.
If it was Breeze and the Saints going up there, that's one thing. But with Bridgewater, it's going to be very loud. I'm not saying that. I'm not putting it past them.
No,
I could see both losing.
Right.
Both losing. But if I have to give the edge to someone, I would say the Rams go down at Cleveland.
I like the way Lowe used backup quarterbacks with an S for New Orleans because Taysom Hill, it's just hilarious that you talked about backup quarterbacks. And in this case, it's appropriate.
Sean Payton's going to have some wrinkles. It's not as if they're moving on from Drew Brees, but this is going to give them an opportunity to show you what Saints football is going to look like in the very, very near future, speaking 2020 and beyond. All right, Brian Baldinger is here. It's time to get to the Niners-Steelers preview next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Very happy to not go to the Dialpad guest line right now. He is in studio with us. He's going to rock all the way through the 10 o'clock hour from the NFL Network, former NFL offensive lineman, Brian Baldinger with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. What's up,
Baldy? Good morning. Good morning, fellas. Good morning, San Francisco, the Bay Area. Good to be here.
You're late.
Nice to find the place, you know. I mean, I was running Lowe's Hills over here, man, trying to get to 865 battery, but I'm here, so I feel good.
He's sweating pretty good, guys. Look at that.
I got a good lather.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
But, you know, the good thing
nice
is I'm awake.
Yeah.
I'm awake and alert. And the brain's plugged in.
You are here because you're going to be on the call
yes.
for Niners-Steelers this weekend. I find this type of thing fascinating. I don't know if I'm the only one, but how do you prep for stuff like this? Guys like Al Michaels, Collinsworth, yourself, when you call these games, when you're a part of these broadcasts, how do you go about your prep?
Well, I did the Steelers last week. I did the Steelers, you know, loss last week to Seattle. So I saw them in person, talked to a lot of guys, Cam Hayward and Joe Hayden, talked to a lot of guys before the game. You know, we watched, you know, Ben Roethlisberger basically not even warm up before the game. And then at halftime came out with a baseball hat. I knew he was out. But, you know, I mean, I watched the game. I studied. I got my computer right here. I mean, I could plug it in and watched every play of the 49ers and the Steelers last week, most of the league. And so, look, I feel like I got, you know, the roster now. I know who Justin School is, you know, and, you know, I watched him run block last week. I want to see him pass block this week. But, you know, I just want to I feel like I know the rosters. I know the teams. I know the stats. I'm not really a big stat guy, but I know what they are. And, you know, so that's how I kind of get ready. And then I just sort of flush it. I spent a lot of time on the field Sunday down talking to guys. You know, so I'll see George Kittle and get a lot from George and McGlinchey and all the guys, and, you know, whatever they give me, I get and plug it in during the show, and then I kind of let them kick off and do the game.
Well, what do you make of the Steelers team? Actually, Lo, go ahead. Sorry, that question can be asked all morning.
No worries. I want to interrupt you for a sec because you said something, and I was like, oh, interesting. You said you got there early. I don't know how much early, what, 2 hours before if you watched the guys warm up, and you said Ben didn't even throw the ball. You said he hardly warmed up. What, did you think something was going on then?
What was weird? So it's, you know, it was weird was I usually get down the field if it's 1 o'clock kick.
Yeah.
I usually get down there around 10:30. And guys are out there, you know, just sort of got their headphones on, warm up. You know how it goes. So, but I got a relationship with a lot of these guys over the years, you know, so I go over and say hello. And some guys I don't know, I go introduce myself. I didn't know LJ Collier of Seattle last week, so I went up and said hello. Jadeveon Clowney, we started talking. But, so I'm out there, and I'm watching Mason Rudolph warm up. I talked to Russell Wilson. He was out there early, doing his thing. I mean, he threw the whole route tree to every single receiver. And then, but I was like, I was looking for Ben. And right. My producer was going, where's Ben at? And I did see him. He came down, but he was in street clothes. And he really didn't warm up until the team came out and was in his uniform. And I hadn't done a Steeler game in a while, so I thought maybe that's just what Ben is. He's just not a big pregame guy. He just saves it. But then I was thinking, like, man, I've never seen a quarterback not come out.
Right.
Brady actually sometimes won't come out, depending on the weather, but until the team comes out.
Got to protect the hair. You got the whole thing going on with the gel
Great
and all
call.
That. The
Great
gels
call.
And the mousses, the oils and the berries.
I have said, you know, a little too much product in there, Tom. But no, but I just thought that was a little bit, I thought that was odd. And then I went back and I watched week one, and he didn't have that brace on his forearm. And then during the game, he had that brace on. So, like, it was like a rubber band. So I thought something might have happened, you know, week one.
That's crazy.
Is he, is that the end for him, in your opinion? Do you think he'll try to come back next season? I mean, obviously with the contract, maybe he tries to come back like Alex Smith is trying to come back. But do you think the Steelers are now transitioning to the post-Ben Roethlisberger era?
Well, I think they want to see what Mason Rudolph does. I mean, he's going to get a, you know, potentially a 14-game test here to see what he can do. And if he lights it up the way we've seen some of the young guys come in and really play well, and the team rallies or whatever, I could see them, you know, cutting the cord and just going younger and, you know, start working with this new guy. But I think Ben will definitely try to come back. He's got a big contract, and I don't think he wants to end it this way. Sometimes, you know, father time ends it for you, you know, so you don't know. But, you know, it's just unfortunate because everything else looked healthy. But the team wasn't good for six quarters with them. I mean, the receivers weren't good. We can get into their team, but they weren't really productive for the six quarters that he played.
So you look at this team and you expect them to be more run heavy, and I know we're going to get full breakdowns on the game coming up, but just the instinct of having a young quarterback who hasn't played, from a defensive standpoint, would you look for that team to run the ball more?
Well, I mean, the receivers, like I said, the receivers haven't been able to beat man coverage. And, you know, sometimes you don't know how much you miss somebody till they're gone. And I know guys aren't talking about Antonio Brown, but he was their passing game. And he opened up everything for everybody else. He routinely beat bracket coverage and double teams and press man and all the things that all the other receivers right now are struggling to do. And so now everybody's like, well, Juju's the next guy up. He caught 115 passes, whatever he did. And, you know, he struggled. And they lead the league in drops. The receiving core just has not been good.
Lo, when Billy Volek stepped in for Phillip Rivers when he was hurt at the end of that season when you guys were in the playoffs, how did the veterans approach Volek during the week? Like, are you giving him words of encouragement, or are you just trying to treat him like the regular guy? And you know how like you don't mess with your pitcher no-hitter bid?
Well, I think the biggest thing is he came in during that game and played well. So when you have a guy like Billy Volek, you saw a success, you know, at Tennessee. He already had proven, a proven winner, a proven veteran, a guy that you're around in that locker room. You watch him on scout team, dice your starting defense. You see him go through the calls. He still goes through the walkthrough. You got a pretty good perception of who this guy is.
Right.
No, there's no doubt that when we were in Tennessee, Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah, sure.
Neil O'Donnell, Steve goes down.
Yeah.
No one blinks. No one blinks. We'll rattle off.
But
five
that's
states.
Different when you have a guy like right. this young, though, right? So
no,
would
it's a,
you?
It's a totally different.
Even though he played a little bit last week, it's still, this is his first start, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like he's a Minshew who's been starting for a whole week now.
Minshew's unstoppable. I mean,
you can't stop the shoe, Brian.
Yeah.
Brady's reign will be short lived.
He got the Manchu going, man. You know? Like, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's, it could be a thing. We've seen the Mets with rally caps in 86. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you don't know what's going to happen.
Jack fans putting shoes on their head. I like that.
Yeah. Rally monkey, which I know is a popular
hair. I was just watching the game earlier this morning. I mean, the defense just threw a blanket over them. And so I don't know what Jalen Ramsey's story is, but that guy's a good football player. He's just not playing the style of defense he wants to play.
Right.
Richard Sherman commented on that. I want to ask you about that in the next segment.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Rudolph for just a second.
Sure.
Bill Barnwell from ESPN made an interesting point yesterday. If you are a 6'5" quarterback and you are a good prospect, you're not going to make it to the third round. So he's a little bit bearish on the Steelers moving forward with Rudolph because, again, 6'5", if you've got all the tools, you're going to go a lot sooner. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I did a lot of his games. I do Big 12 games on Saturday. So, you know, I did a second and third start of his career. Like, you know, he was an 18-year-old kid, and he was big and strong then. You know, I mean, he's 6'5", he's 235 pounds. He was like that as a kid coming out of Rockwell, South Carolina. So, wherever they got drafted, they traded up in the third round to get him. They gave up some draft capital to go, to find him. And they were looking for the next Ben. And physically, he's much like Ben. I mean, he's every bit of 6'5". Out there, I saw him warming up the other day. I said hello to him for a little bit. And he prepares like he was a starter, and he played well when he came in. And I think he's going to be a good prospect. I don't care what round he got taken. And we've seen Russell Wilson get taken in the third round. Everybody gets knocked down for something. Russell got knocked down because he was short. You know, he started 116 straight games. It didn't seem like the shortness thing has been bothering him.
Lowe's been a big fan of Rudolph, so it's interesting to hear you corroborate. Not that I needed somebody to back up Lowe's point for me to believe him, but
what'd you see, Lowe? I mean, did you watch him in college at all, or do you
let that marinate just a bit? Let that marinate just a bit. That plus Richard Sherman had some great comments on the Jalen Ramsey situation. It's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Now, with an over-under of, he had a relatively sharp show this morning.
He's had a good week.
I'm setting it at one. No mistakes if you want to bet the under on Langford here.
Oh, boy.
Here's Stephen Langford with what's coming up on the game.
Thank you, Joe. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Nature Valley. Sweet and salty bars. The 49ers get ready for the first home game of the season against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Starting left tackle in Joe Staley's place will be rookie sixth-round pick Justin Sewell. Jimmy Garoppolo spoke to the media yesterday to talk about the rookie.
He's been very consistent. Smart guy. Came into the huddle during the game. Didn't blink or anything. One of those guys, he does the right thing and he's in the right spot. So, you know, he's been the same guy every day, and you got to appreciate that.
95.7 The Game NFL insider Adam Kaplan will join the guys here coming up at 7 o'clock. Take Joe Lowe and Dibs on the go. Download the radio.com app and favorite 95.7 The Game. The Raiders are on their way to Minnesota to take on the Vikings for their first game of the season.
Can't wait to hear that horn, that Viking horn. I love that thing.
Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars are the indulgent break you deserve in your day. Have you tried the dark chocolate, peanut, and almond flavor? Now that's a sit on the dock and take a moment kind of bar. Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars. Brian Baldinger in studio with Joe Lowe and Dibs for the entire show on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
We're calling the segment now Losers. That's at 9:20. Losers.
Wow.
Because we're trying to make it very clear in this contest amongst the different shows on the station, we are not falling in line. We're
right.
Intentionally trying to pick every game wrong. And we're doing a great job of it. We're 2-6. We're doing a great job of it.
We're locked in, Baldy.
Latest right. installment of Losers coming up at 9:20. And then, of course, Lowe versus Dibs.
You're shorting stocks here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
In
okay.
a contest with no prize among the four shows, we decided to make a statement. And so we're out for losses. I know you're a big fan of competing and winning, and I'm all for it.
Yes.
Normally. In this case, for us, losing is winning.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're
doing.
It's
a different approach.
That's what we're doing. It's a little bit contrarian, some would say, a little bit contrarian. And then, of course, the coup de grace at the end of the show, Lowe versus Dibs at 9:50.
Tough start for Lowe in week three on that front, as I had Minshew and the Jags, and Lowe, unfortunately, went with Tennessee. So it's
Well, I mean, that's just that.
Yeah, stand on ceremony for Jags Titans.
Exactly.
Emotional attachment. It's hard to break that.
Yeah, right. And I have an emotional attachment to the shoe. So I think it's what, Garrett Minshew? I was calling him like Greg, I think, all day
you
yesterday.
You see his dad in the stands?
That
it's exactly what you would think his dad looks like. Big, jacked up, all fired up.
He looks like he could block for him.
Yeah. Without question. All right. I want to play some audio for you. The situation regarding Jalen Ramsey, it's fluid. Last night could have been his last game as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Richard Sherman was asked yesterday during an open media session his thoughts on the idea of whether or not the Niners would pursue Jalen Ramsey, what it could mean for the team. Take a listen.
Honestly, I haven't, like you said, I haven't paid attention to any of that, and I don't think, I think we're good with what we have. I, you know, we leave it to the front office. I don't make those decisions. But obviously, they felt comfortable with what we had going into the season. That's why they cut the guys they cut and kept the guys they kept. Really confident in our guys at every position. It's unfortunate we had an injury at tackle. But thankfully, we'll get Joe back at some point during the season. And we believe in the guys that we have to hold down the ship until he comes back. So I think we're really confident in our DBs and our corners, our linebackers, our D-line, our O-line, backs. Our quarterback, obviously, and our receivers, so we're ready to go.
Naming every position in the sport of football. But you got to assume, as the leader of the team, that's exactly what you'd want him to say.
Yeah, only thing, Joe, he left off your punter.
Right, right.
Because you don't have to worry about Wisnowski.
I don't know. Kind of a couple shanks that, I don't know, Joe.
Colin Holba is a long snapper. I mean, those snaps were good last week.
they brought in the all-veteran to long snap. You seen that, huh?
Yeah.
Brought in
Sean Kondo.
Oh, Kondo, 15-year guy. I think that Richard Sherman's saying all the right things. He is. He's there to play, not necessarily worry about the personnel that they bring in. And he says, hey, I think their corners are okay. You look at what Weatherspoon, how he's been playing the last couple weeks. He's been playing well. I think the whole defensive unit's been playing well, especially when you get the pass rush that these guys are able to, the pressure they're able to put on the opponent has been really well. So I don't think that you need to disrupt this team. I think, in my opinion, again, I'll continue to beat a dead horse. I'm more concerned about the offense. I'm more concerned about the offensive tackle. When you lose a Pro Bowl, maybe even a potential Hall of Famer in Joe Daly, and now you're thinking, hey, I'm going to use a six-round guy that's young, that's not as strong, that hasn't matured into his body yet to go out there, and you're going to be playing against Bradley Chubb, the different guys you're going to be playing against and going against, you're going to have to protect him. And when you have to compromise, put a line, bring a fullback in or a tight end, 12 personnel, and try to chip, guys are going to put a defender on him and say, okay, now we're going to put a body over each guy. Let's go on over defense. Let's cover the guard, cover the tackle, and let's cover the tight end. And let's see. Let's create that one-on-one matchup. So I'm on the more of the camp that you need. Maybe if you're going to trade for someone, maybe a tackle. I'm not sold on Ramsey. Great player.
Baldy, take me through your thoughts on the Jalen Ramsey situation. Would you want to give up the draft capital and the contract it would take to bring a guy like that in to a team like the Niners?
Well, I've heard everything from 2 first-round picks to 2 second-round picks. It's a lot to give up. From what I understand, one of Jalen's issues with Jacksonville is they're playing all this zone defense, and he just wants to be a press man corner. You got DeAndre Hopkins. You're going against Houston. He wants Hopkins. You want Pittsburgh, you're going to go get Juju. I mean, that's what he wants to do, and they're not using him like that, and he's frustrated by that. He wants to be Deion. He wants to be a shutdown corner and travel and all that kind of stuff, and that's not what the 49ers do. So I don't know if it's a great fit here, but, I mean, Jalen Ramsey's talent speaks for itself. I mean, he's a talented guy. I mean, he could tackle. He wants interceptions. He gambles. He does get beat. I mean, I've seen him getting beat by – out here last year, I saw him got beat by Tyreek Hill, and I've seen him get beat by some elite receivers in his business. But I think it's just a bad fit right now, and I don't know how Jacksonville's going to just let him get out of there. I mean, that win last night was a good win. They're off till Monday. They're going to get rested for their next game. You win another game, you're 2-2. I mean, that's all you want if you're trying to figure your team out with a backup quarterback at the end of September.
What do you make of the idea that he wouldn't fit a team's culture? Are you concerned about the attitude? A lot of people portraying him as, it might be a bit harsh, but a malcontent with the way things are taking place. But if the right team brings him in, do you think there would be a blow up down the road? Or maybe this guy just really wants to win, play man coverage like you said, and then if he's given the right opportunity, you're not going to hear from him again?
Well, 2 years ago when they went to the AFC Championship game, he was in the second year, I think, and he was a dominant player, and he was a big part of their success. They were the number 2 defense in football. And so, until the 49ers took them apart, but with Jimmy G that day. But I think you'll get the best of Jalen Ramsey if he's in the right situation. Yeah. I mean, but what is the right situation?
And how many teams actually play that way? And this is a question for the room, because it was fascinating to hear you break it down like that about him wanting to just play man-to-man, because we always talk about Richard Sherman, who just plays a side. So what's the breakdown defensively from teams and philosophies as far as how many teams actually play the way that he wants to play?
I was watching Pittsburgh and the Chargers last night, and Darius Slay Jr. went anywhere Keenan Allen went. I mean, the entire game. It was an unbelievable contest, actually. I mean, Darius Slay won at the end because he had the interception at the end of the game on Phillip Rivers against Keenan Allen. But Keenan Allen got his number quite a bit during the day. But that's what Slay does. Slay is out there to slay your number 1 receiver. He competes like crazy. And so, it depends on the system. Like in New England, Stephon Gilmore travels with your best player. And that's what he did week 1 against Pittsburgh, and he took Juju right out of the game. So there are places that play like that.
What do you make of Akello Witherspoon? This year, through 2 games, he's looking very good. But again, they've got a pass rush this year. So we're wondering, now that you actually give the guy an opportunity to make plays early in the season without having to cover for 10 seconds. We saw Janoris Jenkins complaining about this with the Giants. He can't cover guys for 10 seconds. He's already calling out the pass rush. Akello Witherspoon's entering his 3rd year. There's been some questions as to whether or not he could be the guy, but 2 weeks in, he's looked pretty solid.
Yeah, he has. And they're taking the ball away. I mean, look, they've got 4 interceptions. We know they had 2 all year last year. So that's a product of – but, they're getting their hands on footballs. Like, backup middle linebacker intercepted one in the first week. They're getting their hands on the footballs. The pass rush is there, and we haven't seen the best of the pass rush. I don't think you've seen the best of Dee Ford, and you haven't seen much from Nick Bosa yet. But I think you will. And so, it's been a pleasant surprise to see, some of the guys, whether it's Armstead right now, the way that he's playing. He's played the best football in 2 weeks that he's played so far in his career. So I think that once you get it all going, I think you're going to see more and more of it. You may see some this week against Mason Rudolph.
You think it's going to be a struggle for Richard Sherman to adjust to safety one day. Can you give us your thoughts on why? I want to hear Baldy's take at one point on this.
I think when you have a guy that wants to travel to one side, he's comfortable. His body's been used to it. You watch his bell technique. You just watch the way he covers one side. Doesn't like to necessarily travel because he's been used to it. I mean, he's been, it's kind of like is this is how he's trained behavior. I don't know if Richard Sherman, you put him in the box and necessarily say, now you got to stick your head in there. Now you got to go head up with a running back. Is he going to shake you in the hole? Okay, I understand. You've been coming at a corner. You're running at an angle. You're tackling the guy. He can't see you. Now you're in an eight-man box, and okay, the linebacker's filling a hole, and the safety is just you and him. And you know how defenses scheme for the safety. It comes right to the unblocked guy. Has he been in that position? Can he do it? I just don't know if Richard Sherman is built to just necessarily be in the box. So my thing, they were talking about bringing in Jalen Ramsey, moving Richard Sherman when he wants to go back to safety. I just don't know if Richard Sherman will be a dominant safety as he is as a running back.
Something to think about that we'll jump into next, as well as Ryan Clark, former defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, had some really, really interesting comments about the San Francisco 49ers and where they currently fall in the pecking order. Buckle up. You're not going to like what he had to say. That's coming up next. It's Joe Lowendibs with Brian Baldinger here on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
We want to focus on Ryan Clark, former Steeler defensive back. He's now with ESPN. Yesterday, they were doing a segment ranking, you know, standard stuff, power ranking teams, talking about the 2-0 teams, the 0-2 teams, who's the best of the worst, who's the worst of the best. You know how it works. Here's what Clark had to say about the San Francisco 49ers.
The Bills are the lowest 2-0 team. And coach is right. They should be higher because you know who should be behind them? The 49ers. They are pretending. They are faking us out. They are imitators, pretenders, whatever you want to say. They are not the real deal at 2-0. Listen, I still don't believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know a lot of people said he's gotten over some of the struggles of the preseason and he's fully back from the injury. Kyle Shanahan did a great job of scheming people open against the Cincinnati Bengals, but he was not sharp against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They won that game because Jameis Winston was just actually worse. And so watching this team progress down the rest of the season, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have to be better, but they have to continue that run game that we saw unveiled in Cincinnati.
Dibs, pretenders at 2-0, the San Francisco 49ers?
I don't think so. I mean, you can look at the opponents and say, yeah, Jimmy G was not terrific against Tampa, but the defense was dominant, and so you win that game. And then what they did to Cincinnati on the ground with three different running backs carrying the ball more than 10 times, you're racking up 6 yards a tote. I don't think that there was anything pretending about that. Whether or not they beat Pittsburgh, Cleveland, the Rams, the next three opponents, ultimately all these things get settled out on the field.
Baldy, is a 2-0 team, where do they stack up? Are they as good as the record indicates, or is there still a lot out for the jury here?
Well, there were, you know, coming into this week, there's 9 2-0 teams. So I don't know how you really stack in the Patriots, number one, whatever you want to do. You know, the Bills have played the Jets and the Giants at the Meadow, you know, and so
State champions.
Yeah, they are. They're the New York State champions, New Jersey State champions. So, like, that's not really saying much, you know. But I like what Buffalo's doing. All the additions they've made offensively, they've really improved a lot. And I've been a believer in Josh Allen since he got there. I like the kid a lot. And he's getting better. But, you know, I don't see what Ryan Clark is saying, to be honest with you. I think they've played good complementary football for the first 2 weeks. And to go in Cincinnati and rip them apart like that, Cincinnati had they should have beaten Seattle in Seattle the week before. I mean, they threw for 400 yards. And if Andy Dalton just didn't act like Andy Dalton at a couple of moments, they would have won the game. So you can compare opponents, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I know Ryan Clark, you know, likes to be outspoken, and that's who he is. That's fine. But I don't agree with it. I think the 49ers are on the way. They're putting this thing together. I said in the offseason and all the way through training camp, if this team doesn't win 10 games, it's a major disappointment. I mean, they have all the talent accumulated over 3 years to win games. And if he doesn't believe in Jimmy G, he just doesn't believe in him. But, I mean, I thought he hit his deep routes, and I thought he was sharp on Sunday. And I thought each game of the four games he's played this year, he's gotten better in every game.
When you're new, when you're fresh, you're going to draw skepticism. And that's what it is for a lot of people with the Niners. People don't know the Niners as a 2-0 team. They don't know the Niners as a contender because they've been anything but in the post-Harbaugh era. So to hear Clark's comments, it's not necessarily that they're so far off base, but you have to figure there's going to be a certain level of criticism and, more importantly, skepticism when it comes to trying to properly evaluate them right now.
Yeah, there is, and I'm just shocked that Daniel has come around. I mean, here's a guy that didn't have him win in 7 games, you know, this year, and I see now after the 2 games that he had him probably losing, now he's starting to come to my church and get on the same pew. Maybe he'll be in the same drawers before the show's over.
Let's play that a little bit because I took the under on 8, not on 7, so I actually did think that they might win 7, and I didn't think that they'd win both those road games. This is a team that was 3-13 on the road, Baldy, under Shanahan. the last 2 years combined. So the fact that they handled both games and not in fluky fashion, that to me is impressive. I have to acknowledge it. I can't just have it be an ostrich take and keep my head in the sand. What sense does that make, Lorenzo?
You're right. With all due respect, I let you speak, and I even let you come over to top me right now to get your point across.
Come on through.
So if you let me finish, I
would love to.
<All right.
laughs> See how
Baldinger
gets...
by 10, you'll have had enough.
No,
trust me.
No, I see the battle going on here, man. It's awesome. I mean, most people aren't ready to battle at 7 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's good.
We started at 5. Yeah.
Usually 4:45. Okay. You know,
before we walk in the door there, we're on at each other's throats. So,
do you have a finishing kick on what you were starting there?
Yeah, I just think that the 49ers, when you talk about Jimmy G, I know everyone's going to point to Jimmy G. Do I think Jimmy G is a great quarterback? No, I don't. I think that he can manage games. I don't think that he needs to be great to win 9 to 10 games. I've always said that. I state that. I do not think Jimmy G needs to go out and throw for 400 yards for this team to win 9 or 10 games. If he plays within himself, don't turn the ball over. Their defense is good enough, and the running game that they have will get this will get this team over the hump.
This Clark's comments are extremely fair. Extremely fair. Now, with a media twist, obviously he puts a lot of emphasis behind it, a lot of opinion behind it, because that's what sells in the media. It's what's smart. It's what has him as a fast riser at a major network. But they're fair points, because the way human beings default, here's the perfect example. If New England makes a controversial signing, Antonio Brown, it's viewed as genius. Why? Because the Patriots have had a ton of success. Mm-hmm. If the Raiders make a controversial signing, say Antonio Brown, it's viewed as highly controversial, problematic, and something that's going to blow up in their face because they haven't had a lot of success. We're more likely to default to what we're comfortable with than what we're uncomfortable with. And that's what people are trying to reconcile now when it comes to San Francisco 49ers. The Niners won't be getting any credit from anyone outside of the Bay Area and from some within the Bay Area until they go out and truly prove it in a manner that makes people feel comfortable. Beating Tampa does not make anyone feel comfortable. Tampa has produced a losing record in 7 of their last 8 seasons. Does anyone know when Tampa's last playoff win was? It was January 26th, 2003. It was the Super Bowl against the Raiders. Beating the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I remember that.
Beating the Cincinnati Bengals. Does anyone know when the Bengals' last playoff win was?
Well, it was before Marvin Lewis was there.
January 6, 1991, against a team that doesn't even exist anymore, is the Houston Oilers.
Wow.
So, it's not to disparage the Bucks or the Bengals, but when those are your two wins, no matter how good they look, when you're trying to prove people wrong, or at least correct an image that people have had of you, one of underachievers, one who haven't played well, this isn't going to be enough. This isn't going to be enough to get people to buy in. The key is whether or not beating Pittsburgh is enough to get people to buy in. If you go to 3-0, beating Pittsburgh this week, do you think people buy in? I don't, because they still have an excuse, and it's the fact that Ben Roethlisberger is hurt.
I mean, you're right. All these things. But, I mean, September, nobody's producing any champions in September. But, I mean, it's better to win in September right now. I mean, everybody's trying to figure out their team. Whether you're 0-2 or 2-0, everybody's trying to figure out what you do well. You know, everybody's making adjustments. Everybody's suffering injuries right now. How do you overcome them? The loss of Joe Staley is a lot more than just that guy at left tackle. I mean, he's the leader of the team. I mean, his attitude when he walks into a building is what you want.
Right.
I mean, the guy's an upbeat guy. He's fun. He's fun about everybody likes being around Joe Staley. I mean, he's got great leadership qualities. That's a huge loss in a huddle in the locker room. During the week after a loss, I mean, you need that guy on your team. So hopefully he's going to still be around after he rehabs here. I mean, the play was such a freaky play to begin with. To think, how a defensive end can trip on him like that and the thing, you know, snaps or whatever happened. It's just fluky. But they got to overcome, you know, a loss of a great leader.
And so this becomes more of a Jimmy G game then, Lo, to your point about they don't need him to be terrific and throw it all over the park, but maybe now they do because do you see the run game suffering more than the pass protection without Joe Staley?
I think you're still going to be able to run the ball. I think that you got to get to make sure you get the wide splits. You got to get guys on the ground. And now when you're playing tackle and you're not as strong and you're not as physical, boom, you jump guys and you know you're not going to get necessarily a double team. And at times you go ahead and you can cut. You can't cut behind the legs, but you can cut on the line of scrimmage. So try to get guys down. If you can get guys down on the ground, you create some space in that way. There's different ways to win your your battle. When you got a guy, he's just bulling, he's trying to create a new line of scrimmage. You got to do different things, and that's when you'll see some of the misdirection, getting guys fast flowing over, and you still got that play action and try to boot, move the pocket, do some other things. And they'll chip at times, but I think that you look at this running game and the way that this team is committed to it, Kyle Shanahan, and I think the crowd's going to play a big factor. You still should have some success running the ball. This team cannot go into this game and abandon the run. You can't do it.
How long do you think it would take for the consensus sentiment or the majority opinion of the Niners to be that they are a legitimate football team that can make some serious noise? Like, the two ways to do that are to beat really good opponents or to produce a really great record. Case in point, like 2 years ago, Kansas City under Alex Smith was viewed as a good team, a team that had some potential, but probably not the elite, the top tier. Mahomes steps in last season. They opened the year 5-0 before they lost at New England. But when they lost at New England, it was Sunday night, and they lost 43-40. That's a really good loss. They hung 38 on the Chargers, 42 on the Steelers, 38 on the Niners, 27 at Denver, and then 30 on Jacksonville to go 5-0. So let that one rattle, because I want to come back to that in a little bit as to how long it would take before the opinion swings. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game, but with a twist. Brian Baldinger in studio with us until 10 a.m. this morning as we are on a football-heavy show. For right now, we go to the dial pad guest line, 95.7 The Game football insider Adam Kaplan with us here on 95.7 The Game. Adam, good morning and thank you for your time. We appreciate it as always. Let's start with the latest on the Jalen Ramsey situation. Played last night in Jacksonville's win. Do you see him on the move and with a new team by next weekend?
Well, look, let's first of all, guys, good to talk to you today. The trade deadline's not till the third week of October. People are acting like he's got to be traded tomorrow or else. I mean, it's never been about that. It's just about managing a tough situation. The owner, Shad Khan, this is not a secret from talking to people around the league. He does not want to move him. He really likes Ramsey. He's also the one who's got to sign the check if they ever extend his contract. But it's just been very difficult to deal with him because Ramsey was told months ago he wasn't getting his extension this year. Miles Jack would get it, and he got it. Ramsey supports Jack, but he wanted to get his contract done this year because he knows how great of a football player he is. He's also a talker. If you've ever been to a training camp there, I'm sure Baldy knows this. This guy doesn't stop talking, doesn't stop chirping. He reminds me a little bit of Asante Samuel, a guy that he just is his own guy, but you know what? He's not a distraction off the field like some other players have been. This is just the way he is, and he's a lot to handle, but he's also a phenomenal football player. And guys like this, and why I think if the Jaguars wind up trading and why they're going to get, they should get maximum compensation. Guys like this, and I've already checked into this, for the next two drafts, I had one team tell me, in their tape study from college football, there's no one like Ramsey in the draft. This is why you give up multiple first-round picks or a first-round pick and a big-time starting player. This is how good this guy is.
The Steelers acquire Minka Fitzpatrick and also send out a first-round pick. How impactful will he be this weekend, in particular as they take on the 49ers?
Yeah, it's interesting. So they're going to use him not at slot corner, not at outside corner. They're going to use him at safety. Sean Davis, their starting safety, is on injured reserve. And now think about it. They've got two first-round picks at safety, Terrell Edmonds and Fitzpatrick. They're looking forward to getting him in there. And I look forward to seeing this. But the one issue, well, let's face it, it's never been about their front seven. It's been coverage, their lack of playmakers. And, I mean, Fitzpatrick is a special talent here. This guy's very, very unique. And Keith Butler, the veteran defense coordinator, who's been with the team for a long time, he's got a challenge on his hands and to get this rolling as they play out against Kyle Shanahan. And I got to tell you, and I'm a big Kyle fan, what he is doing with their offense. I mean, I watched the All-22 yesterday just to get a feel for it. I mean, this guy is special as a play caller. Baldy and Zoe, you guys know this from seeing the tape. This guy's pretty remarkable. If the quarterback plays a little bit better, they're going to seriously challenge for this division.
Adam Kaplan joining Jolo and Dibs and Brian Baldinger here on 95.7 The Game. As for this weekend against Pittsburgh, we were playing Ryan Clark's comments from ESPN earlier, the idea that the Niners are a pretender at 2-0. Everyone goes through these segments. It's not to knock Clark. We're going to look at 2-0 teams and see who might be a bit overrated. We're going to look at 0-2 teams and see who may be a bit underrated. But what do you think the Niners are going to have to do to get to that point where the national opinion of them is one that they are a legitimate contender and that they are for real?
Well, look, you only could play who you play on your schedule, and they are 2-0, and you could say they beat two bad football teams. But the one thing, the one takeaway I had from spending 2 days with the Niners in training camp was their defense, from a talent standpoint, is so much better than last season. And that's without, by the way, getting much from Dee Ford. If you look at their defense, Joe, through 2 weeks, 13 tackles for a loss, 7 sacks and 5 turnovers forced. The big issue last season, the lack of turnovers from the secondary. Well, when you have a good pass rush that helps your secondary, and Richard Sherman's back to where he was before the Achilles injury, this defense, you know, people are getting on Robert Saleh for the defense. What I had said, give him some talent. Let's see how good this defense could be. And you see it, Joe. I had said on the station before the season started, 8 to 9 wins is my win range. I stick by it. Could they get 10 wins? Yeah, they could get 10 wins because you look at the schedule. There are a bunch of winnable games on the schedule, and Seattle's not quite what they once were. Although, I know talking to the Seahawks, they feel really good about getting Clowney in there, and he'll get the defense down, and they're getting Ansah in there. They're getting some of their injured players back soon. That defense is going to be one to reckon with. But the Niner offense, though, is still the concern for me from Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not quite where he was before the injury, and we knew he wouldn't be. But give him more time, and he was much better last week.
In your opinion, what does the Steelers have to do to make this game competitive? Or even look at, if you're saying an upset, what is going to be your biggest concern?
Well, the thing is, when you look at Mason Rudolph, you don't really know what he is. I had an offensive coordinator tell me that he had graded him as a second-round pick last year. So you know there's talent there. He's got size. He can move. Arm strength is – he doesn't play to his size. Like, his arm is not great. It's good. It's above average from talking to some coaches who graded him. But the big problem they have is they're probably going to replace Dante Moncrief. James Washington and Deontay Johnson are going to take over, I think, for Moncrief, who I think is leading the NFL in drops for the first 2 weeks. I mean, you can't play a guy who continues to drop the ball like that. And that would be the concerns that you are is you don't know about Rudolph because you don't have enough tape on him. And let's not forget Juju Smith-Schuster. They're young, and James Washington's Mr. Training Camp. I mean, he's been dominant in two training camps, and he hasn't gotten done in the regular season. But they're very young at receiver other than Moncrief, and they all could run, so keep an eye on this. They're going to be challenged with their speed.
James Washington is the all-time leading receiver with Oklahoma State. They've had a lot of good receivers. And all those passes came from Mason Rudolph. They have a good connection. I expect that. But this offense wasn't good with Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, they have not run the ball well. The receivers have not beaten press coverage. Juju Smith got shut down by Stephon Gilmore. I don't know that this is a great situation for Mason Rudolph or any backup quarterback, because I think this team realizes now just how much they miss Antonio Brown.
Well, they don't have Baldy. They don't have his experience. And when you talk about James Washington, it's interesting. He's a guy, and you mentioned the numbers and how great he was at college, but
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.